Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
And good evening to you all. If you're just joining in on the second hour of the program, I am speaking with Donna Spear, and Donna has just written a memoir. It's just been released. It's called The Naked Truth, The Fall and Rise of Donna Spear. Good evening, Donna.
Hi, Stacey. Thanks for having me on.
It is a real pleasure. You have so much to share with us tonight, but first of all, I want to tell you that I just finished your book today, and kudos to you for speaking the truth, for getting it out there. You didn't have any stone unturned throughout your life, and I'm just surprised that you actually remembered it all. But things that have such an impact in our lives, we do remember it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I thought it was best that I put it down just as it was, as raw and as ugly and as honest as I could, because I thought it was best if there was any way that I could help other women in discovering their truth and healing their shame and their pain, that I wanted it down exactly as it was.
And you did that very well. Donna, let's get to your book now, and basically it's your life story that you put so clearly there. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, because you're a model, you're an actress, you happen to be actually a centerfold model for Playboy, and you have a lot to share with us, and you start off in your book talking about mostly your father as a child. Why is that?
You know, I had a very, very special bond with my father, or so as when I was young, I tried to. He was very, very abusive to me when I was very young. And as I talk about it, he had an extreme harsh impact on me. And I spent a lot of my life trying to be that perfect child, that perfect girl, and that perfect woman. And as I found out later on in life, that became a pattern for me with abusive men. As time went on through my journey and through my life, I realized that I had a lot of healing and growing within myself to take care of myself and then heal that relationship with my father. But that was the very beginning of my structure of how I was going to be and to bring those type of men into me. And also, that was my stigma of what I was putting out into the world.
As I said, you speak a lot about your father, but you didn't speak so much about your relationship with your mother. Did you ever figure out what brought on a little bit of resentment between the two of you?
You know, one of the things that I guess I really didn't make clear in my book was I'm the youngest of six children, and my parents were a lot older when they had me. So regarding my mom, here's the deal with my mom. She was about 33 or so when she had me. And so there was a really big age gap. And back then, that is really old to have kids. And so, you know, there was, you know, that was the time back then where we didn't talk a lot about things. You know, I have no clue what my mom went through when she was growing up, you know, and as I look back, I really wonder if there was some sexual violence in her family. And I also believe there was mental illness in her family. So there was a lot of things that were unresolved. And you're right, I didn't talk a lot about my mom and my mom's and my relationship. Though it was very healed by the time my mom passed, there was a lot of things that were unspoken. And it wasn't so much resentment that I had toward her, but more that she had toward me. It was her, what I found out in my journey in life, it was her issue, not mine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have taken this further on through your life. You we're going to get to that step by step, but let's talk about when you first started modeling. How did this come about that you got into modeling?
Isn't that interesting? The funny thing is, Stacey, is that I never wanted to be a model. I never was one of those girls who wanted to be beautiful and perfect and be a pageant girl and in front of everybody. I always wanted to be a florist. I am a salt of the earth, get out, dig in the dirt, tomboy kind of girl. That's who I am. And what happened to me was I had a girlfriend in my freshman year of high school. I was very impressionable. I was very awkward. I was still kind of growing into my own skin. You know, I was wrapped a little too tight. I wasn't sure where I belonged. You know, I probably thought too much about myself, I was very self-involved, worried about myself. And I was at a girlfriend's house, and her father came to me and said that I would make a good model. Actually, he said to me was, I heard my daughter mention that you were interested in modeling, which I had never said. And I went, oh, because I didn't know I could say, no, I didn't. Yeah. Because I didn't speak to adults like that then. I was raised, you don't say no to adults. You don't say, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I just went, oh, okay. And I remember thinking in my mind, I never said that because I was never interested.
Well, obviously, a lot of people were interested in your look. And it seems that this did not turn out to be such a pretty picture.
No, it wasn't. And what it ended up being was, this was a gentleman, and this is really important that I put in here. This was a gentleman. He was actually the captain of the fire department in the city I lived in, and he was out on disability. And so he was very well known and respected in the community. And what he was he was a child molester is what he was. He was a predator on young girls. And it started very slowly, and it started just like predators do. They get into your world, and they start getting your trust, and they start with a little bit of touch, and they get into your family, and they maneuver their way into your secret life and get to learn about you and what your weaknesses are and things like that. And they spin a very fine web. And that's what groomers do. But at the time, I didn't know that. I was very young and impressionable. What I know today about things like that is that I had no sense of self as a young girl. And we didn't, back in those days, we didn't talk about things like that. Now things are a lot more open. And I think because of the internet and television and things like that, that parents are a little bit more apt to talk to children about that. But also, I think it's really important to know that predators are not necessarily the guy that drives by in the car and snatches your child. And predators aren't the guy in the trench coat. Predators are generally someone you know and you trust. It's the family member. It's the guy next door. It's the Girl Scout or Cub Scout leader. It's someone that you know within the community, you've had in your home, that has been around you, that you trust. And this is who this person was.
Yes. And unfortunately, you don't feel when things start to go a little bit wrong, even though you may sense it, you don't feel that you can reach out to your parents and ask them if it's right.
Absolutely not. Because at that time, as things started to happen, what predators do is they make your body their body. And that's a perfect example of what a photographer does. He started teaching me quote unquote modeling lessons, and my body became our body. So him touching my shoulder or arranging my arms or moving became our body. It was no longer my body. So those things became normalized. He then starts showing me pictures of women that are scantily dressed. And anytime you look at a grooming type, type of format, you will see how they start to desensitize children of what was once abnormal becomes normal. If you going back and looking at Michael Jackson's Neverland, that's what he started to do with children. He started having him close to them. He started putting him in the same bed. He started showing them pictures. He started doing, and that's exactly what they do. They start regulating a child of what was once the abnormal to be normal. And then they get involved in the family and then they make their move. And what happens for the child, or what I should say, what happened for me, Stacy, was that I brought this, I believed I brought all this behavior on myself. If I had only not let him get close to me, not let him touch my shoulder, not let him see the side of my breast, not done this. And then one day when he said, Donna, take off your top, this picture will look better. Had I not done that, I wouldn't have been the bad girl. So now it's all my fault because I have nowhere else to do but internalize that.
Yeah, I understand perfectly. Donna, you mentioned Michael Jackson. Do you get a lot of grief? Because a lot of people do not believe or want to believe this regarding Michael Jackson. And anytime any article comes out and it talks about or points out the fact regarding the documentary about him, they are defending him. What do you have to say to these type of people?
You know, I cannot change ignorance. But what I do know is that I can help educate because of my experience. I am a very bright, articulate woman, and I would never think that those things would happen to me. Honestly, if you looked at me today, you would never think those things happened. And I was in full denial for many, many years. And I know we're going to get in and talk about the next phase of how this happened. And I was in full denial. I would justify that man's behavior toward me as it was my fault and defend him and other people who have violated me. Until one day, my behavior was screaming out so much. It was like, it's kind of hard to say. I took it out on myself. Until one day I went, wait a minute. This is wrong. Something is wrong. My life is no longer working. And I need to stop and look at why. So when people go, oh, Michael Jackson's a saint, Michael Jackson's this, Michael Jackson is. No, what Michael Jackson is, was he was a musician with an extreme sickness.
Yes. Yeah. I
that's all he is.
Okay, Donna, you are modeling and you ended up, finding yourself attracted to drugs and alcohol. Do you remember the first time that you had tried drugs or alcohol and who introduced that to you? Was it the same predator?
No, I was a teenager. I had smoked a little weed. I had older brothers and sisters. I had smoked a little weed when I was 12 and 13. Not a big deal. A little bit here and there. And I drank a little bit on the weekends like teenagers do. But what happened was, as I was working, quote unquote, modeling with this man, and I started having secrets, what happened was I started taking heavy doses of narcotics and I started self-harming and I became severely suicidal. And at that point, I started overdosing on mass amounts of drugs.
How old were you there?
15 years old, 16 years old. My parents never put two and two together. See, they think they come from old school. Okay. They never had any problems with my other siblings, five other siblings doing this. I'm holding a job at a floor shop. Now you got to remember, I come from schooling in school where I'm a mentally gifted minor. They are putting me in classes. I am like in fourth grade going to school with fifth graders. I'm in seventh grade going to school with eighth graders. I'm above an IQ Okay. But all of a sudden now I'm in high school and my grades are tanking because I'm on drugs and I'm seeing this photographer. I still have my little job at a florist shop and I'm dying on the inside and I can't tell them because in my mind, there's something wrong with me. And they're saying, you need to go to school, you need to go to work, and you need to see this photographer because you need structure. And what's happening is I lose the job at the florist shop because I can't show up because I'm overdosing and I'm ending up in psychiatric hospitals. Well, you lose the job. You need to go to the you need to go to the photographers because you need some structure 3 days a week and you need to keep up with these quote unquote classes. And now they don't know I'm not showing up to school because I'm skipping school and doing drugs now all the time. And it's just, it's created such a bad pattern for me that now, I mean, I'm overdosing. I cannot control my drug use or alcohol use. And now I'm showing up in psychiatric hospitals because I'm suicidal and I have nowhere to turn and no one to talk to. And I refuse to open my mouth.
You must have felt very, very lonely.
It was devastating. It was a devastating time for me. I was extremely alone, extremely alone.
Donna, do you, you we're going to get to how you've gotten through all of this and what a great life that you have now. But do you think trauma is the root of addictions?
I think you create trauma through addiction. Okay. So for me, this is what it is. Okay. Imagine a circle. So I had trauma as a child, right? Obviously, through my father, I had a lot of beatings and things like that. I believe my parents did not know a better way of raising children. Okay? It doesn't mean what he did was correct. I just believe that he did the best he could, meaning I forgive my parents. I do not believe I do not believe he intentionally set out to harm me as a child, okay? I believe that created trauma. I believe it lowered my self-image and my self-worth and my value. I believe I was predisposed as a drug addict alcoholic, okay? I believe that once I started doing drugs and alcohol, it lowered my ability for judgment, which means once I get that in my system, I don't know what I'm going to do, which means I may behave in a way that when I become sober, I wish I wouldn't have, which creates shame and guilt, which creates the cycle of more shame and guilt. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. I have another guest here in the studio, Joanna Mobley, who's listening in, and she's shaking her head the whole time as you speak. Say hello.
Hi, Donna. It's Joanna. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Joanna.
I have a question, actually, because to lead the traumatic life that you were leading at such a young age, you must have at some point had to start to lie or hide this life with the rest of your family and your parents. How did you manage to do it? And at what point did you realize you were lying and it wasn't right?
It was all a lie. Everything was a lie. It was a constant lie. I juggled so many lies and lives in my entire life until the age of 23 years old. And what I did also was when I got old enough, I mean, I did geographics. I changed people and places and play friends and things like that. My entire life was a lie. And I was running and I was scared and I was frightened and I was shame-based and I was hurt. I was so hurt inside.
It's amazing this. And as you talk about it, it's like, yes, we all know someone who has been there or gone through something like this. But Donna, it even gets worse. You mm-hmm. end up going from one predator to another.
Right.
How did you meet Bill Cosby, who is a predator, a rapist, a convicted rapist?
Absolutely. And this is Stacey, and I need to explain something to you. When my life, when Bill Cosby steps in as a saving grace, you know my life is terrible.
Yeah.
Because he came in as almost like a saving grace. That's how bad my life was. That's how bad and how horrible could my life be when a convicted rapist, and I'm 16 years old, he's 42, he is 26 years my senior. How horrible could my 16-year-old life be? But that this is the person that I'm looking to help me.
But you didn't know, and no one else knew at the time of of how bad it could be, or we're talking in hindsight now. No one believed that this person could be capable of doing what he did because he was famous, because he was known in every household. Which is like you say, bringing back to that what predators do.
Right. But the reality is that I'm 16 years old and a man 26 years my senior. Obviously didn't care.
No.
He didn't care. He didn't care. But that was my saving grace out of my hell. Okay. So what happened was, and that's when it really got bad. So what happened was a friend of the family who played tennis with them took one of my pictures, and I had gotten away from the photographer and for good. And by the way, the photographer stalked me.
As they do.
And yes, he stalked me, and I got away from him, and because of a bizarre things, I became professional. It just happened anyway, and they gave him my picture, and he called my parents, and he was a friend of this lady's who played tennis, a nice neighborhood gal, great gal, just, and they were nothing going on, nothing. And who wouldn't trust this man? It was before his Cosby television days. And, you know, he was doing Coca-Cola and this and that. And he was doing picture pages on Captain Kangaroo. And he talked to my parents and said, you know, I would be willing to mentor her. She seems like a nice young girl. And, you know, she could fly out to Pittsburgh. And she, you know, we could give her a little bit of this and that and put her in front of a camera and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I'd look after her and she'll be okay. And, you know, you got to remember my parents are older and they're tired by now. They've raised six kids, you know. So by now my parents are, criminy, I'm 16. My parents are in their 50s, you know, and they're tired. They're tired of raising kids. You know, they're tired. And, you know, my mom's going through the change of life and I'm a teenager, you know, and at this point I've been in and out of psychiatric hospitals. I've overdosed, but it has stopped now because I'm away from the photographer and they don't know why it stopped. It's just stopped.
No.
So they're seeing like a slight upswing, it stopped for a few months and they're seeing an upswing and they're like, hey, something's changing. And they're seeing me get modeling jobs and they're seeing me get commercials and they're seeing me and they're like, something's happening here. And so off I go to meet Bill Cosby and I do these little picture pages and there we have it.
I'm listening to you full on. I'm not interrupting you because
that's okay.
It's a story that's just all too familiar, except the fact that you were 16 years old. And Donna, you got involved in a relationship with him. And where was his wife all this time?
I have no idea. So I'm going to back this up a little bit, Stacey. At 16, I think I'm 25. But I'm really 16, and emotionally I'm like a 12-year-old. Because I'm beat up. You got to remember, I'm still scarred and I'm wounded. So I'm looking for anything to cling to at this point that's just going to love me and pay attention to me in any shape or form. Because I'm a broken young girl at that age after going through what I've been through. And by the way, I've still not mentioned a peep to anybody about what's happened to me. Not a peep. And I'm carrying that burden.
About
the photographer.
Yes. Okay.
And I'm broken. And I'm still broken. And so I meet Mr. Cosby. And he's looking at me. And he's seeing, like, if you're just a good girl, if you can just be a good girl, I can do these things for you. And it was kind of like that father situation. If I'm just a good girl, I'll get the love that I want. And there it was. It was that same thing. And I got to tell you, he turned on me many a times.
What do you mean turned on you?
When I didn't do what he wanted, or I didn't act the way he wanted. I mean, I remember one time I borrowed $300 from Bill and I didn't pay it back right away. And he went insane on me and made me pay it back with interest.
Okay. That's very generous.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane. So, you know, so here's the number one question, Stacey. Everybody says, so where were your parents? So Bill came into my life. I'm a young, broken girl. And as I look back at those pictures, you see how truly young I was, right?
Yeah.
And I defended him for a long time. And by the way, I want you to know, no one knew about our relationship. My sisters didn't know. And I never would have written the book had my parents not passed. Okay?
I understand perfectly.
And also, they did not know until the day he was put away in prison and handcuffed and taken away.
Who didn't know until?
My sisters, my family.
Your family, yeah.
So regarding Bill, I kept that relationship a secret because I couldn't, for a lot of years, I couldn't differentiate because at 16, I thought... And even as I got older, I thought that that was an adult relationship. I couldn't until as I got older and started piecing together some of these bad relationships I had over the years, that the damage that that had done to me. And that it went straight from the photographer, from one damaging predator to another. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
I didn't piece it together until I got closer to 30 years old. So regarding Bill, what happened there was that I was with him for almost 2 years. And what happened was I had gone straight from drugs into heavy drinking. And he had no problem supplying me with as much alcohol, and he just weaved his way right into my family's life. He began calling my mom, and he took my family on elaborate vacations and my sisters on elaborate vacations. And, you know, he flew all my family out to Bill Harris' place out in Idaho and Reno and Tahoe, and we all would all go to Vegas and my parents. And, you know, no one ever asked a word about Bill's and my relationship. And people always asked, the number one question was, where was your mom? Where was your mother? How could she not? And the number one answer I give, is, why would she ever suspect something? I was a 16-year-old girl, a Caucasian 16-year-old girl, in the late 70s, early 80s, He was a 42-year-old African-American man with 5 children, married for years and years. Why would anybody suspect anything?
I understand, but I still think that at the same time, possibly a mother in that case just wouldn't want to know. I mean, things are looking up for you. They don't want to question anything. They just kind of turn that blind eye. That's personally my thought on that.
I understand that, but we'd all stay in the same big old suite, and I'd stay on one side with my mom, and he'd stay on the other. Or Bill and I would go to Vegas, and I'd have my own room. She'd call. You know, it was never a question. All of us would go out to dinner, my parents and Bill and I, or my family. And no, or, I mean, he went out of his way to set up some very, very elaborate things. I mean, he set up an entire Coca-Cola set. He flew my mom and I back and had McCann and Erickson involved and heavy-duty photographers and people and all these things set up. I mean, you would never think that someone would go out of their way to do something like that to molest their young daughter.
Donna, did your mom never ask about where his wife was?
No. I mean, she was, because we always saw him on the road. And plus, I had met his children. They might have met his children.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Well, she was always in Philadelphia or somewhere or something, or with the children were very young then. She was with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you had met her.
No, I never met Camille.
That's interesting. Okay, so we're getting the picture here about the predator. We want to get back to your life. We have a lot to cover in a short amount of time, but you have you said you started turning to alcohol more and more and more, and this was also during the time that you were with him and doing the photo shoots and everything. It just kept getting worse. And
it
nothing was
worse.
Said about that. He didn't say anything to you about that.
Never, 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 never said a word about alcohol or drugs or anything, but he didn't. And then I started going off on drugs again. You know, I just, you know, honestly, Stacey, the cycle of my life at that time, though the overdoses and the suicide attempts had stopped, you know, I was still out of control.
And you basically were just keeping your brain numb.
Right. I was running, and I was running hard. And, you know, by the time I was 18, I just crashed and burnt. I just crashed and burnt. And honestly, I needed to get away from Bill and you know, it was just bad. It was... I had so many lives going on and I was dying inside. I was just dying. I was dying physically and I was dying inside. And you know, no one knew what to do with me. This was years before freebasing, and I'd started freebasing. It was the call. And this was, I mean, you got to remember, this was long before I even did Playboy. This was all happening before I was a centerfold or even stepped in front of like movie cameras. I mean, I'd done some stuff, but I mean, this was all before I wasn't even old enough to graduate high school yet. That's how young all this was going on in my life.
Yeah. Well, you're lucky to be here. You're lucky to be alive, Donna.
There isn't a day I don't realize that.
Yeah. Well, so How did you get to the Playboy centerfold thing? Who introduced you to that?
Long story short, I went through rehab and I got sober. And at 18, I got sober and for about a year. And an agent walked me over to Playboy. And, you know, it's just one of those things that happened. You know, my life was never about planning. It was about situations, and I just kind of followed whatever someone said to do, honestly. And someone said they're looking for playmates and this and that. And all, next thing you know, I'm shooting for Playboy. Literally, it happened overnight. Mm. It was what, nothing that I had planned.
What year was that?
1984.
Okay.
And I shot when I was 18, and 19, I was on the centerfold, and I worked for Playboy for 7 years. And, you know, it was a crazy time, and I drank and I used the first few years, and it went from bad and it went to worse, Stacey, honestly. And, you know, and all those things, you know, by the time I was 23, I'd been married, three and a half times, something in there, a lot of times, because, you know, Stacey, I wish I had excuses for all this behavior.
Well, it leaves you something to talk about today, right?
No kidding. I mean, honestly, you know what? The reality was, I was a drug addict. I was an alcoholic. I was lost. I was scared. I was running. You know what? I was always the bride. I was never the bridesmaid. I would cling to anything and anybody. You know, and parts of my soul had been ripped out. And that's the truth. I was damaged goods. And you know what? I just didn't know. I was rudderless. I was just rudderless for years.
Donna, you said you started AA. What brought you to rehab? I assume it was AA. You started getting sober and all of this at the age of 23, you just briefly mentioned. Who introduced you to that? Who did someone say, you know, do this or you know, the highway? Were you forced into it?
18, I went into rehab for the first time. So 18 was the first time I went into rehab. And that's a pretty interesting story because I got to tell you, Cosby was still calling my mom, trying to find me then. And Bill, my mom had told Bill I went in, and Bill's calling on the payphones there. And they're leaving notes up.
That's just sick.
Bill is calling me in rehab. I went in 2 months after my 18th birthday. And I remember telling him, no, no. And he's going, you know, you were a lot more fun when you weren't sober. I mean, I'm dying. I am dying from drug addiction. And he's saying I was more fun before I got sober. I'm dying. Stacey, I weighed 97 pounds from freebasing in a closet for 7 days. And so I got sober, and that's when I was first introduced to 12-step. And at 23 years old, I was married to a man I hated, and he hated me. And
was that the man you called Hitler?
That was the man I called Hitler that I ran over with the car my last night drinking. And poor Hitler. To this day, you know what's funny? We're still friends. And, you know, I went to make amends to this man when I was about 5 years sober. And he was really funny. He said to me, he goes, you know, Donna, he said, I heard your voice come over the television recently, and I ducked because I used to throw things. I threw things at him so often that it was a natural response for him to duck. I mean, that's how crazy I was around this man. God bless him. It was like the dog when, you know, you scream at the dog so often that you walk in the room and the dog scrambles off. That's how crazy I was with this poor man, you know. So, it was Hitler. And Hitler.
Luckily, you changed his name.
Right.
At least for the book.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I called him. So anyway, Hitler, I hadn't come in. I'd been out all night and, you know, I'd been out all night drinking, and it was in the 80s, and I came home and I had an eyelash smashed my cheek. My big old hair was crunched to one side. And, you know, I'd gone home with the manager that night to some bar because that's how I drink. I just don't come home and I sleep around. And, you know, I'm terrible. I'm a terrible person when I drink because I don't know what's going to happen to me. I just don't know. And that's where my drinking had taken me, to the depths, just to the depths. And I had no self-esteem and no self-worth, and I wasn't valuable to myself or anybody else on the planet at that time. And I was married to a man I hated that I had met in church, and I don't even know what I was doing at church except searching for something. Just looking for something in this world to rescue me. And I met Hitler and we got married, and he looked like Ken and I looked like Barbie, and it seemed like a good idea at that time. And I came home and he asked me what I was going to do about my drinking, and I lied to him and told him I was going to get sober. And, you know, I started going to 12-step meetings, and something just took. And I was 23 years old at the time, and it saved my life. And honestly, Stacey, I didn't plan on going there to stay sober. I didn't plan on there going there to change my life. I didn't plan on going there to help other women or to get spiritual or anything. I went there to get Hitler. I almost mentioned him by his name. I went there to get Hitler off. I almost mentioned him by his real name.
Yeah.
And it's funny, he's in Greece right now too, because I just talked to him. I went there to get him off my back.
He might be here in the studio and you just don't know it.
That would be okay, because we're friends and I'm friends with his new wife. I'm actually friends with all my exes. So, yeah, I've made amends and cleaned up all that. I went there to get him off my back. You know, and I was going to, I mean, you got to remember, I was a terrible person. I mean, I couldn't decipher the truth from the false anymore. And I'd hurt so many people. I was just a train wreck running through people's lives, and I just didn't care anymore.
You kind of went into another snake pit, didn't you, with doing the work for Playboy? Wasn't that a little bit tedious and being around all of those people? I'm sure some there were good and some were bad, but
it was. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Stacey.
I don't know the environment of that, but I can only just imagine or what I think it would be like. You can tell me more. But in your situation and at the time, it seems like you just going into that environment, you probably felt a little bit exploited, I assume.
It, you know, Playboy for me, looking back, had its ups and downs. Okay. I was really a scared young girl back then. Okay. And as I look back now, I realize that, you know, it was a very weird situation. It was really weird because it was like I worked for them for 7 years and they pretty much owned me. I mean, I had other agents. When I first started with them, I was drinking and using and I'd go up and I'd have the parties. But like there was Hefner and he had his creepy girlfriend who was bisexual. And they tell you to go up to the mansion and to go around there and try and be seen, so maybe you'd be Playmate of the Year, but you don't know if you will. But if you don't go there, then you possibly won't, but you need to go up there so you can possibly be in the magazine more, and that'll mean more money. And so basically they were one of my employers, and they were probably 50% of my paycheck. And so it was some weird, freakishly odd game.
Yeah.
And it was fine while I was drinking, but once I got sober, it got really weird.
I can understand.
Okay.
But Donna, I have a question.
Sure.
Before we get off into something else, did you ever worry about running into, or did you run into Bill Cosby? Because he apparently was one of Hugh Hefner's best friends, and he frequented the mansion a lot, it was said.
No, he was gone by the time I went up there. I never once saw him up there.
What do you mean
Isn't
he was
that
gone?
Strange? He never was. I never saw him up there when I was up there. He wasn't up at the mansion at that time. But when I was younger, and probably I must have just gotten my driver's license, and I didn't get it till I was close to 17. He had me come up and meet him there. He was playing tennis there once. And I was like, the Playboy Mansion, I can't go there. He goes, meet me up there and we'll go over to my house in Beverly Hills. So I went up there and I got in his car and we went over. And that's when I met his daughters. But other than that, when I turned 19, 20 and started going up there, he was never there anymore. And I don't know why. I never once saw him up there after that. Never once.
Interesting.
I didn't even know he hung out there.
I've only known in recent years from reading things, but actually, when it all came out about Bill Cosby, and then again after Hugh Hefner died at the age of 91, it was talked about. So I was just curious, after reading your story, did you ever run into him there? But you've just answered that. So
never. Well, I didn't even know he hung out there until recently, like as you and I both, Stacey, were reading the articles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no clue.
And did you think of Hugh Hefner as a dirty old man? Or
Stacey, honestly, I stayed away from Hefner. I really did. It was a real weird situation. It's like you get too close with Hefner, you might be propositioned into having to sleep with him, right? And if you say no, you're screwed. If you say yes, you're screwed. So I kept my distance.
Good on you.
Yeah, I was like, there's no. And my standard answer was, people would ask me, Donna, did you ever sleep with Hefner? I always said he didn't have enough money. I mean, what am I going to say?
You have some good comeback lines, and I want to get to that too, because in reading through your book, you said something that I was quite impressed about, and it kind of like brought that light on. On page 147, I read an important from you. When you were at your hairstylist, he confronted you about your marriage, and you said, by owning my truth, no one in this entire world could ever harm me again, and that I would own my own all my behaviors and beat others to the punch, and no one would ever be allowed to shame me without my permission.
Yes.
And then you got a divorce from Hitler.
Yes. And you know what? To this day, I own that. You know what? I own my truth. And that's why everything, my book is very raw. People call me all the time or send me emails and messages and going, oh my God, I started reading your book and I'm crying and I can't get through the first three chapters. And I'm like, I was with my husband and I keep getting these messages and these, and I'm going, what are these people reading? What are, you know, because I wrote this a while ago, and I'm like, so finally one night I pulled the book out of the closet. I've got stacks and I get in bed with my husband. I open it up because I'd never open, and I'm reading this and I'm going, honey, have you read this? This is traumatic. This is awful. Have you read this? This is just horrifying.
Did you find, Donna, that you had to just write it all down and just go with it and not look at it? Just write it all down?
Nope. I just, you know what? No, I didn't. No, it was like, you know what? I when I wrote it, it wasn't traumatic when I wrote it. I wrote it. And I didn't write it like from beginning to end. My co-writer and I wrote it in different blocks. Okay, we're going to write this, we're going to write this. But I said, you know what? I'm putting it down the way it is because it is my life and it's okay. It doesn't make me less or worse or better of a person. It just is.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, oh, well, I'm really sorry. Move on.
That's correct. So, Donna, why did you come out with your book now?
You know what? It was the time. It was the time for me to come out. I've always wanted to write my memoir, not because I wanted to publish it, but it was the time. And, you know, a lot of people have come out forward with their truths regarding women and what's happened to them. And it was just my time to say, yeah, this is what has happened to me. This is my experience. I'm not a victim. I'm a victor of my circumstances, of predatory behavior. And also, this is all the shit. I'm sorry. This is all the stuff. This is what I've done. And all these situations has made me this dynamic woman who's 55 today. And I'm totally valuable and worthy and lovable and this incredible human being.
You are. You are. And I want to thank you for writing your book because it does get it out there. One quick question because we're running out. We only have a couple of minutes left. And I wanted to ask you, did you believe the other women when they came out about Bill Cosby?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And did you...
Yeah. Are you kidding me, Stacey? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Okay. Did you have the chance to read the book Chasing Cosby?
I have not yet. I have not. But, you know, do I even really need to read it, honestly? I mean, they've been chasing him we've known the accusations for years and years. Well, but I will pick it up.
I certainly didn't until... of course, that's why I moved to Spain and back in the late 80s. But I just was completely removed from all of it. But anyhow, Donna, I want to get to the point of you now have moved on with your life. You have a gorgeous son. You're happily married.
Yes.
You are helping other people with abuse, all types of abuse, and you have with recovery. How can someone, apart from buying your book, find you to reach out to you and share their story or whatever it is that they want to?
You know what? They can go right to my website at donaspeir.com. Simple as that. And, you know, I am just all about, you know, just finding your value in life and whatever I can do to help that. Honestly, Stacey, that is what I have found my purpose in life has been now. That is it. You know, I'm a recovery coach when it comes to drug and alcohol abuse. I work with men and women now. And that's what I do. And that's my passion. And that's my life. And that is what my journey has been. And my gift has been given to me.
Excellent. Donna Spear, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing with people listening around the world of how they can overcome predatory behavior, what to look out for, how to get more involved in their children's lives, notice what's going on and question everything, and also that there is a brighter side. So, Donna, thank you very much once again. The book is called The Naked Truth, The Fall and Rise of Donna Spear. Donna, I look forward to speaking with you again. There was so much I wanted to get to, but there just wasn't enough time.
Stacey, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate everything you've done and your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Donna Spear.
Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.